I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Peter Dorian from Oak Beach in Far North Queensland, Australia, welcoming you to the very fabulous Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you, Peter. What a perfect day to have you as our intro for the Tennis Podcast. Peter is a friend of the Tennis Podcast at the intro level. If you'd like to introduce a show, you can do exactly that by becoming a friend at that level. And yes, from lovely Queensland in Australia, on a day that Australia have had the most wonderful day, reaching the final of the Billie Jean King Cup finals by Gainbridge. And here, Matt and I are late into the evening on Saturday, and it's been another thoroughly uplifting day, I think, in terms of competition and storylines and all the things that you want from an event like this. I mean, look, there's some very sad people today upset at the fact that Great Britain didn't win, for instance, because they came so close. Disappointment also for the Czech Republic, beaten by Switzerland. But my overriding feeling is that there were worthy winners there in Australia and Switzerland, and both teams that have had such disappointment in this competition at the final hurdle the last couple of times that they've played it, or at least two runners up in a row. Now one of them is going to get crowned. One of them is going to get disappointed again. It's the beauty of sport, I suppose, isn't it? And who better to be speaking to about the beauty of sports than one of the all-time greats and an icon of the sport, and the woman whose name is on the trophy, Billie Jean King. That's who Matt's been speaking to today. It's amazing. And I've listened to the interview, folks. I've listened to all 15 minutes of it. I loved every minute of it, and you're going to get to hear it towards the end of this tennis podcast. Matt, the person that got to speak to Billie Jean King, how are you?
Very well, thank you, David. Yes, it's been quite a day. Both an extremely emotional tie this morning, which obviously led into the afternoon between Britain and Australia. And then about 15 minutes I had between that and going to speak to Billie Jean King. So a sort of day that I can't really get my head around, to be honest, but a very, very fun one. And I'm feeling very lucky that I got to do all those things today.
Well, Australia against Great Britain, let's start there. We were talking about what an early start it was last night, but it did not take long to get thumping with an atmosphere, did it? And we got the end result that I kind of expected in terms of it, or that we all expected in terms of it going to the decider. I mean, I don't think even we thought that it could get quite as dramatic as it ended up doing in the doubles. We thought it would go to the doubles, but it went there in a route that I certainly was not expecting. I was not expecting Heather Watson to lose to Storm Sanders. When we recorded last night, I have to say I did a pretty quick about face when I finished the recording, because it was as though I'd forgotten how good Sanders had been and how good she seems to be in this competition, and all the other evidence I've got of Heather Watson playing her best stuff when she's kind of not really expected to, and when she is expected to, maybe struggling a little bit. And then I certainly didn't expect Harriet Dart to then equalise things by beating Ila Tomljanovic, who looks like the class act on paper in the singles. So It got to where you wanted it to be, but Matt, that was not my expectation as how we would get there.
I completely agree. I was not that surprised by the overall result, and I wasn't that surprised by the fact that the doubles was really close. I didn't think there would be that much between the two teams, but I think we said yesterday that it felt like an absolute must win for Heather Watson, because we all expected Ayla Tomjanovic to beat Harriet Dart. So that to me is the biggest surprise, Harriet Dart beating Tomjanovic. But just to start with the first match, Storm Sanders is so easy to overlook, I think, because we don't really know how good she is. And this has been a real theme of her week, in that everyone around her, Alicia Molik, Ayla Tomjanovic, are all saying that next year they really want her to focus on her singles because they really think she can get her ranking up. She's currently stuck in that slightly awkward spot, which we've talked about with some players on the podcast before, where their doubles ranking is really high, but their singles ranking is low. I mean, she's outside the top 200 in singles, and therefore she's playing different events, or she's having to play different events because, you know, she can't get in to the singles draw in the doubles events she wants to play. So therefore, she's having to sort of focus on doubles. And I think I get the sense, and this is not something she said, but it's just my observation, that playing doubles has been a real comfort zone for her. You know, she's someone who pretty much felt like she wouldn't have a singles career a few years ago when she was injured. And I think doubles has given her that. Doubles has allowed her to have a tennis career and experience great things. She won the mixed doubles at the US Open this year. And I think now is probably the time for her to maybe slightly let go of that and try and kick on in singles, because she's shown all week and last year in this competition as well that her level in singles, when she plays well, is definitely top 100 level for sure, probably even higher than that. I think everyone just wants to see her have a go. Now, of course, it's the classic thing of how do you take what you're experiencing in this competition, which is so different to life on tour, and transfer it to life on tour. You know, you could do a whole thesis on that and what the challenges are and players who've managed it and players who haven't. And I think Sanders is going to be one who let's see if she takes the plunge and really tries to improve that singles ranking next year, because her game's great. And she was so poised on the court today, I thought, against Heather Watson right from the start. She broke quite early, kept that lead, had a little bit of treatment after the first set, which hindered her a bit in the second set. But really, I felt like she was the better player and very much a worthy winner. And she really saved her best tennis for the tiebreak as well, right in the second set. Just so many winners. And I was really impressed with her today. She was the star of the show for Australia, having to win both points, of course.
Yes, of course, because she was part of the doubles rubber as well. And if I think back a year, Matt, she put some good performances in the Billie Jean King Cup when you were there in Prague. And I was curious what has happened since then. And is this just, you've kind of explained it to me in a different way to what I expected, in as much as you've put some importance in the fact that just logistically, if you're a top doubles player but not a top singles player and you can't play them both at the same event, you are in a bit of a wilderness there. Mm. It's a really difficult position to be in, and you've got to kind of choose. And I remember us talking to Luke Saville when we were talking about junior Wimbledon champions who either made it or struggled to make it, and that show is available for Friends of the Tennis podcast right now if you want to have a listen. But he eventually gave up singles and concentrated on doubles, and he's made a good go of it. But, you know, sounds very much as though she's got a lot more in her in terms of ability and potential, according to Alicia Molik, whose opinion I would trust on that subject. But I do wonder what's happened the last year, and actually, is that element of producing this sort of tennis that she can produce in a team competition, can she can she get that onto a singles court week in, week out, and at the major tournaments and build that ranking? Because it is fascinating. You're right. I mean, there's a great study to be done there. But I do love watching a player. That's what makes this event special as well, is the way it elevates people.
And I think we'll probably have the same conversation about Harriet Dart. I mean, because she has played pretty much the best tennis of her life this week in terms of doing it one match after the other. And then, you know, I think next season we'll be wondering, can she carry that forward onto the tour? And I think for Dart, it seems to me that playing Rybakina and Barossa and Tomjanovic back to back to back has really helped her. She's just got used to that level quite quickly, I think. And, you know, on tour, the challenge for her will be winning matches that she's favoured to win. You know, she was favoured to win none of these, really, because it's quite an unexpected position that she finds herself in as the number one player for Britain, because obviously Emma Raducanu is not here. But I think, yeah, just having those matches consecutively against top players, it's almost like she's sort of assumed their level and is starting to play like a top player herself. I've always found with Harriet Dart, I don't really feel like I know her. I don't really have a grasp of what makes her tick that well. I don't really feel like I understand her game all that well either. But this is by far the best I've seen her play. I feel like she's been more aggressive. She's been stepping in, and there's been real intensity to her as well. And I think that bounces off well with the team, which is another element that maybe she won't have on tour. So it's going to be absolutely fascinating to track the progress of both Sanders and I think Dart next year on tour, week in, week out.
Mm. Catherine actually suggested to us that Harriet Dart might be a contender for the intensity list working title, which Catherine has begun in recent weeks, which is quite a statement. But I mean, I think I get the point. You know, here's a player who brings it. She's relentless. Her game is about relentlessness. And she said after winning against Ila Tomljanović on court, "When I've got GB on my back," those were the words she used, "I feel like a kind of a different player, and I've got goosebumps coming out here." And I love that. I love somebody who just grows a couple of inches when they're in that sort of spotlight with everybody relying on them. You know, I always hope that if a rival was in a position like that, I would be better when everybody's relying on me. You know, it's a great responsibility, isn't it? Now, I don't have to worry about that at the local tennis club here in Solihull, but, you know, very, very impressive win for her over a player who I thought would have her for way quite comfortably, really, in Tomljanovic. So that set up this final rubber, which just went to the brink. And you've still got these pretty much novice players at this level in Olivia Nichols and Alicia Barnett, who had saved Britain in that first day, really, by winning that effectively dead rubber for the tie that they were playing. They were 2-0 down already against Kazakhstan, but that was the result that gave them a chance in their second group match, which they ended up winning 3-0. And again, Nichols and Barnett coming through and winning that doubles. Here they go up against Sanders, who we know is just a fantastic big match player in this environment, and he's playing really well. And somebody who honestly had retired from the sport or had announced that this is her last year. And in Sam Stosur, who's won the US Open more than 10 years ago in singles, but has had fantastic doubles results as well. I mean, she was a former world number one doubles player before she was ever a really serious singles competitor at the very top level. What a battle. What a tug of war. What an atmosphere, Matt.
It was extraordinary. And I actually think both teams, as you've laid out there, had on the court kind of the perfect pair for what they needed in that scenario, because Barnett and Nichols just fed off the energy in the crowd, which had been generated by Harriet Dart winning and giving everyone belief and getting everyone excited. I mean, the way they celebrate points is extraordinary. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, they're throwing their arms up in the air after, you know, a forehand winner to get them to 15 all at one love in the first set. And I sort of think, on a lot of people, I would find that annoying, I think. But I don't. It's been quite infectious and really has added a lot to this event and this competition and this British team, I think. They've energized everyone, this pair. And then on the other hand, you had Sam Stosur and Storm Sanders, who were both very level-headed and quite quiet with their demeanor on court. And I think actually that level-headedness and that calmness was quite a good quality to have with the sort of frenzy going on around them. And they just sort of knuckled down and played their game and just they didn't take the sting out of it, but they didn't let Nichols and Barnett get way ahead, which they maybe could have done, sort of riding the wave of Harriet Dart. I think Sam Stosur was very tight the whole match. I didn't think she played particularly well. There were a lot of missed forehands, some missed volleys. I actually felt like Barnett and Nichols maybe should have targeted her a little bit more. I think Sanders was the one who was really, really playing well. But then it just developed into an absolute epic. I mean, I really don't like sudden death deuce, but there were a lot of important sudden death deuce points. And the fact that it was sudden death deuce meant it was, you know, moving along at quite a pace. And we found ourselves in three really dramatic tie breaks, didn't we? And it was so exciting. I really didn't know who was going to win right down to the final ball, which is such a good feeling to have as a spectator. You know, you're hanging on every point. There was quite a controversial foot fault called at 6-all in the match tiebreak on Olivia Nichols. It's tough because you can't see a replay for that, and there hadn't been one called the whole match. I think they were a bit annoyed about that, and that did seem to switch the momentum because. I don't think they won another point after that, the Brits. But it was a fabulous doubles match. Barnett and Nichols have been a breath of fresh air in this tournament. They're talking about wanting to reach the top eight in the race next year and qualify for the WTA finals. They think that's possible. That's their ambition. And I'm excited to see them on the tour as well. But fair play to Australia. They did it in a really, really hard way. But they've been one of the best teams in this competition, and absolutely, I think they really deserve their place in the final.
As do Switzerland and Australia. It have felt all the way through this event. They have felt like the standout teams. Now, I think that's a great credit to Great Britain for getting as close to Australia as they ended up getting. But Switzerland against Czech Republic. Well, it was 4-0. And I think on paper and with the pedigree of Czech Republic, that comes across as a surprise. But at the same time, Switzerland have just had that look in their eye all the way through, all their players, Heinz Günthert, their captain, the camaraderie between the players. They seem really close and they seem utterly absorbed in trying to put right in their minds what happened last year. They seem to love each other's company, and they seem to be just awesome players. I mean, again, Victoria Golubic is the player who won the first rubber 6-4, 6-4 against Karolina Muchova, who again is a higher ranked player in terms of pedigree. She's the one who's had the runs at Grand Slams and beaten Ash Barty and all that sort of thing. Golubic is a lovely player to watch, but, you know, I would say she looks a better player here than I've ever seen her look anywhere else. She seems to be like Sanders, who's just been inspired by being in this company. Belinda Bencic, the same, although obviously we know how good she is. She just looks an incredible player in this competition. She was really pushed in the second set against Karolina Pliskova, 6-2, 7-6. It was properly close and nervy at the end there. Came down to very, very fine margins. But I always thought Bencic would win. But I am really confused and perplexed by that team selection from the Czech Republic. Petr Pála has been there a long, long time. He knows his team. But the way we saw Markéta Vondroušová perform yesterday to absolutely thrash Danielle Collins, and then Kateřina Siniaková come out and do the same to Coco Gauff, and them to just not get picked for this tie. Now, I realise that that might sound very wise after the event, but I didn't expect this team selection because, I mean, Pliskova got beaten handily a couple of days ago. I don't get it, really, Matt.
It was the shock of the day for me when I had the WhatsApp message come through on the media group here to announce the nominations for that tie and that Markéta Vondrousova wasn't named as one of the two singles players for Czech Republic. I was astounded. I felt like she was first name on the team sheet after the way she played yesterday and the form she's been in generally in the last couple of weeks. Okay, ITF event in Shrewsbury, lower level, but just confidence, winning matches. And so everyone was a bit confused, really. So we spoke to some Czech journalists and their impression was that Vondrousova isn't quite 100% yet. You know, she's not quite fully back, fully ready. And therefore, maybe the recovery time from yesterday, she might have still felt it a little bit today. And also, apparently, she's also got her eye on playing some WTA 125 events next week because she wants to get her ranking back up. And she doesn't want to have to play too many matches at the moment because she's sort of thinking long term as well. I mean, I would argue this is a much bigger match generally than those. Okay, rankings are important. They're currency for tennis players, aren't they? Ranking points. But this was a massive, massive occasion. And Vondrousova has been playing so well. And I just think the most likely scenario for the Czechs was that they needed to win that number two singles because Bencic has been so good. And then they've got options in the doubles. They've got Siniaková, world-class doubles player. Could they win it there? So I was not totally convinced by this explanation. I'm sure that their sources are good and that is perhaps some of the thinking behind it. It just doesn't seem like the right decision to me, either for Vondrousova or for the Czech team, because I felt like the way she played yesterday, Vondrousova probably would have won, even as good as Golubic is and as good as Golubic was. So I'm very, very confused by that. And then I was also a bit confused by Pliskova playing because she was really not good the other night. And as you said, Siniaková was against Gauff. Pliskova did beat Bencic at the US Open this year. So perhaps there was a matchup that they liked there and good feelings perhaps going into that match. But I think we saw the difference between Bencic as a US Open player and Bencic as a Billie Jean King Cup player, as you said. She was awesome today. Okay, she had to fight back in the second set, but she did. And even with a lot of strapping on her leg, which wasn't there yesterday, that's maybe something to monitor in tomorrow's final. She got the job done, as she so often does for Switzerland. And yeah, so brilliant team selection from Heinz Günthert. Again, he went with Golubic. He could have gone with Teichmann. Golubic got it done. And slightly confusing team selection on the Czech side.
He gave a very good preview of the final, I thought, Heinz Günthert, in his on-court interview. He's a very good speaker. He breaks situations down very well to make them understandable for us and onlookers, I think. He's a good communicator. And he was asked, well, what do you think's the difference going to be tomorrow in terms of who wins this? And he goes, look, they can all hit the ball. He said it's all about who seizes the moment on the day. And he says, none of us really know what the secret to that is. You know, he made it very clear that you can't necessarily put your finger on how you do that. Because I mean, I guess if you did, you'd just do it or you'd find somebody who could tell you. But he was clear, you know, it's just, you've just got to be in every point and you've got to go for it. And, I think he's obsessed with winning this thing with this team, and they all are. And I get the same vibe from Australia with Alicia Molik because she was there as the captain in 2019 when they were at home and they were up against France, and it was just so emotional. And I kind of want them both to win because I feel they both deserve a win, and obviously that can't happen. What is your feeling, Matt, about who will win?
Well, as you say, all I know for certain is that the losing team is going to be absolutely devastated if they lose, because this means a lot to both teams because of the recent near misses that they've both had, as you've described. My feeling is that Switzerland will win. They met last year in the competition in the semi-finals, and the lineups were Sanders and Tomjanovic and Teichmann and Bencic. And the Swiss team won very easily. Teichmann thrashed Sanders, actually. That was the only match that Sanders didn't win in singles last year. And then Bencic took care of Tomjanovic in straight sets. I think they'll probably get it done in the singles, Switzerland. Again, I'm underrating Storm Sanders, and I realize.
Do you think they'll bring Teichmann in?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Given that head-to-head, given that Heinz Günthert has been very clear that his chopping and changing of Teichmann and Golubic is nothing to do with their level. He thinks it's kind of a matchup thing and a feeling thing. Now, there's evidence there that Teichmann matched up well with Sanders last year. But Golubic has got him two really big wins, you know, beating Andreescu and the win again today against Mukova. She's been more convincing this tournament than Teichmann was, who really struggled but came through in the first match. But yeah, maybe he will go with Teichmann because of what happened last year. And then Bencic Tomjanovic, it's tough match to call, but I can't really see Bencic losing at the moment. She's just playing so well. And Tomjanovic didn't quite have her best tennis today. Maybe
she's had a long year.
She has. And I actually felt like she would handle today's match a bit better. You know, she was the person that ended Serena Williams's career in that frenzied atmosphere on the Arthur Ashe Stadium. I've never heard anywhere so loud in my life. And she was brilliant. And I think today in that second set, she slightly checked out in that final game against Dart. There wasn't quite the resilience from her that I was expecting that we've seen this week. So maybe there is a little bit of fatigue there as well. I don't know. But yeah, this is a very long answer. But essentially, I think I'm saying Switzerland in the singles.
I'm saying Switzerland because I've been saying Switzerland since day one.
Are you going to paint your nails red, David, like Heinz Günthert and the Swiss team? They have a little tradition there that after each match they win, they all paint their nails. I feel like if the Swiss get you some points, I want to see red fingernails.
I'm glad you've explained that, Matt, because I did catch a glimpse of that for the first time today on Heinz Günthert just after his post-match interview. And I was wondering, you know, is there a reason specifically for this, or is it just his new look? But anyway, no, I'm not going to.
I think you'd look great, David.
Thank you. Okay. Well, all right. I'll think about it.
Content.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, there is that. I think it's high time we heard Matt in conversation with the great Billie Jean King. Here they are.
Well, I'm thrilled to say for the second year in a row, welcome to the tennis podcast, Billie Jean King. How are you?
It's great, Matt. How are you?
Very well.
You
thank
good?
You.
Say well. Hi to David and Catherine.
I will, always. This is becoming an annual tradition. We spoke last year in Prague.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. How have you found your time in Scotland so far? Welcome to the UK.
Thank you. It's been fantastic. I haven't stopped. I've hardly got to see any tennis because we have so many media things to do and just meetings and just thinking about next year as well, how much we can make it bigger and better and all those things. But no, I've had a great time, and you can see my scarf, my tartan. You know, Moffat is my birth name, and there's a Moffat in Scotland that's south of here, and I haven't seen that. I've hardly seen anything, but it's been great, and friends are here and family, so...
And does it feel bigger and better to you than last year already?
I think last year we were really lucky to even have it. Mm-hmm. With the Czech Republic and Prague. So I was very grateful to them to even have it. And this year I think it's fantastic. The arena, Emirates Arena, is really nice. I like it a lot. It's a good size for tennis. And every time Great Britain's playing, the people have really shown up, which is wonderful. And the players have been great. I've been able to meet almost every single team, I think except one. Italy left before I could get to them. But that's always a joy to meet every team and the support team and the captain. You know, so it's really wonderful just to touch base with them and see how they're doing. I always ask them, how can we make it better for tennis? And you know, I'm always bugging them. They're really good. And I love it. And of course, it's a team event, so I love team over individual.
What is it you love so much about team events? To me, watching it feels like everything is more dramatic, more intense.
Much more dramatic, much more tense. That women's doubles with Great Britain and Australia, I mean, seriously? I mean, I think Great Britain had a set point in the first set, lost it, had a set point in the second set, won it. They were up, they were ahead in the tiebreak and lost it to Australia, who came through big just at the end. So, I mean, it was tense, and I love it. I love the tension, the drama, and I love the fact that you're playing for something much bigger than yourself. I mean, first your country, but your teammates as well, and your captain, and the support people, the coaches, you know, the physiotherapists. It's everybody counts. The stringer, I mean... There's one stringer. It's hilarious. What team was he? But he was telling jokes, and no, they're fantastic. It just shows you how it takes a village, you know, a team to have it all work. In the old days, we didn't have these privileges, so that's a big, big improvement, especially for their health, to stay healthy so they can play and make a living and entertain. I mean, we are entertainers. I think sometimes people forget that. Well, the athletes forget sometimes. At least that they may, maybe that's not their perception. Mm-hmm. But I think our job is to make the fans really, really happy. I think the players have. I always think it's important to think that we're there for the people, not the people come to see us. Mm-hmm. And I think it always goes better if you think that way. You know, you leave your guts on the court. You know, it's really the World Cup, and I think people. I don't know. I don't think they're real clear on that. The audience, you know, the people out there. This is the World Cup, just like in football, or if somebody's listening to in America or other countries that call it soccer, this is exactly the equivalent of that. And at the beginning of the year, we started out with 118 countries. And of course, now we're down to two, so, or will be by tomorrow. And I think it's pretty awesome that we can have that many countries participate. And of course, we want to get bigger and more than 118, because there's actually, I think, over 200 countries in this world. And we would like as many as possible playing. And it's really important that women continue to have more opportunities. So anyway, this has been really great. And everybody in Scotland's been good.
Something we've been talking about a lot on the podcast is the tennis calendar and how close the events are to each other. Mm-hmm. And we had the WTA finals just a couple of weeks ago, and then players had to come over here. And one of the players who made the effort was Coco Gauff. And I just wondered how you feel about that, because it felt to me like she was really going out of her way in the way that the players of your generation did to be there, to participate. And I feel like that would be something that you would really admire.
Did admire it, and I admired all the players that came from Fort Worth and the WTA finals. First of all, the WTA made the schedule, and they added Monday, and I'm sure that's the only time they could get the arena, but they didn't call anybody. They just did it. So this event had to adjust to that. No one liked it, because we thought it would be tough. A lot of players maybe not come. I mean, Egan didn't come, but I was hoping she'd at least wait, you know, and see how it went for her. But, I can't be in their shoes. But I was always big on showing up, even if I was overly tired. Our generation was always tired, though. We played so many tournaments, you know. But the players are much better today. The depth is much better. So from the very first round on, tennis is much tougher. It's not even close to what we experienced. But we didn't have the advantages either, or make the money. So everything has its pluses and minuses, but I would rather have it like it is today and have to deal. But I know with, you know, there's seven basically factions or silos in tennis that, you know, there's four majors and you've got the 9 1000s and you've got the WTA and the ATP deciding on all this. It would be good if we could figure out the calendar better, but this has always been a challenge. But I like having it near the end of the year for some, you know, I think everyone wants November to be the team month, maybe, which would be helpful because I think it's really important that we have a team season.
Yes.
Like, when is it? And then the fans, everything is about the fans. Whatever, make it clear for them, make it easy for them. So I really wish we'd find a way, but it's really rough when they kept that Monday for the WTA finals. A lot of players were, I really admire. Mertens came. Yep. She was still doing media at 8 p.m. in Fort Worth, had a 10 o'clock plane. I mean, she was laughing and talking to me about that. And I was like, wow. And she said, no, but I really wanted to get here and play. And when it's for your country, it's just, for me anyway, it's different. It's not the same. It's not just yourself coming.
Are you hopeful for that future where we figure out the calendar?
I'm always hopeful, sure. But what do you think the right thing is to do? You know, everyone wants something. And then they always want prime time or whatever they think it is. I don't know.
And just on Coco Gauff as well, we've been talking a lot about her forehand. She seems to have some issues on that shot at the moment. I'm just wondering, for you, how do you fix technique? I know that you're very big on technique being really important. Is it hard to fix it?
This is difficult because Mr. Gauff is her coach. I think you have to go through him. I know what I would say, but he's the coach, and I've waited 4 years not to say things about it, but I really like her. Hmm. I want her to be number one. I think if you ever heard her speech when she was 16 in Delray or Boca or wherever she was on social justice, when I heard that, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's perfect. Great athlete, can speak, you know, and she really cares. Very, you know, just wonderful. And so it hurts me a little bit to keep watching and want to correct some things, but her forehand, I'm not sure if she understands the contact point. And that's first and foremost. And then on her serve, she can only slice. And I think I would really work on that with her and understand pronation and all those things. So she's really smart. I mean, some players do things by feel. Other players are more analytic. They have to hear it. Like an engineer usually has to hear a lot of discussions and technicalities. Other people are just the kind of how they feel. They feel the ball. They feel whatever. And it's very different how you speak with somebody. And I don't know Coco well enough how I would even speak to her. I'd ask her questions, though. I coach and teach by asking questions. Mm-hmm. Like, I ask players why they won when they come off the court. Coaches never ask. I never hear that. They might ask, what do you think happened? You lost. But I ask, when I'm coaching, I go, why did you win? And you'd be very surprised that players cannot tell me why they won. You can just see them, their eyes kind of go, whoa, you know, and they go, well, let me think. And they think back and they're going, why did I win? Because I think it's really important to stay positive. So I like to do that. But with Coco, there's two major things. But maybe she already knows this. See, I don't know. I would ask her, can you explain your contact point on your forehand? Do you understand where you think you should have it on your serve? I'd like to hear what her thoughts are. I don't know anything, but those are the two areas I would talk to her about. And then I'd even, you know, even with the volleys, she's so young. But you know how people say, oh, she has plenty of time? Well, there comes a time when you don't have plenty of time. So you need to keep working on these things until the time does come. And you got to work really hard and have clarity. And I don't know if she knows any of that. So I don't know. What do you think on that?
I just find it so interesting whether you can change technique. You know, they're constantly playing matches. They're constantly traveling. How much
sometimes
time
you
is
can take
there?
Off, but sometimes you just take some time off. But you've got to work. You got to work really hard. And during these matches, if you understand what you're trying to do, you've got to be willing for short-term losses for long-term gains. And a lot of people, everything's short term now. But if you really want to be great, I think you have to keep building. And even if you lose some, you'll eventually click in and you'll be better than you were before. So sometimes you have to take losses.
And I know that you always say you have to work on your strengths as well.
Yes, every day.
Coco Gauff has got a lot of those.
And, oh, man. How about her speed? How about her overhead? She's amazing.
Exactly, yeah. I don't want to focus too much on the negatives. It's just something we've been talking about on
all
the
these
podcast.
Things are, but I don't know her well enough. I met her at the 16 and 18 and under nationals in San Diego. Her parents were there. They're really sweet. But I don't know her. I don't know the family. So what I say doesn't count because I don't have any idea.
I think it does. Just one last thing on this event. There's a really brilliant addition this year, which is the Tory Burch jackets, which are going to be presented to the winners. Can you tell us about
that? Yeah, I can tell you. Ilana and I had been talking for a while, and then we watched the Masters sometimes, and we thought, you know, it'd be really great, because I keep saying to Ilana, let's make this event special. And so we thought, well, why not a jacket, but only to the team that wins? Mm-hmm. So we've known Tori for quite a while, and she loves tennis. She plays tennis. So we said, would you be interested? She says, yeah, I'll do it now. I mean, what do you want? This sounds great. Because she understands, you know, that she knows some of the players and all that. So she came up with this design. This is absolutely beautiful. And anyone who's seen it, they all go, can I get one? And I go, no, I can't have one either. I'm not, unless you win, you cannot have it. We are going to be really strict on that. Maybe we'll talk to Tori about maybe we should make something that's not quite the same or the Excel, but also inside, we talked, there's something that I say to the players in there. It's inside the label. It's mm-hmm. beautiful. So I don't have it with me. I'd read it, but it's beautiful. Tori and I decided what to say with help from a lot of sources probably, but I'm trying to think back, but that's what makes it special too. It's the inside part.
I can't wait to see the reaction of the
players.
Have
you seen photos at all?
I've seen photos of the jackets and the Billy Blue color. That was a color you used to like wearing.
Well, somebody came up with it. Marjorie or somebody at the office. Yeah, I love blue and lavenders. I love purples, blues. Mm-hmm. Those are my favorite colors because I have no coloring. So I need a lot of coloring around my face for energy. So, no, it's just beautiful because when Tori started thinking about it, she thought about French blue. Look at this French door, and she's in photos. So it went quickly, but it was truly a process that we spent time and effort and thought, and you really want to make it special. Like, you know, would they really like it or not? Because they have their own endorsements. So you want to make sure there's no big Tory Burch all over it and all that. So it's really beautiful.
Yeah, I think it's going to become an amazing, amazing tradition at this event.
I hope so.
I really think so. Billie Jean King, thank you so much.
Thanks,
for
Matt.
Coming on the Tennis Podcast again.
That's great. Anyway, say hi to everybody. I hope everyone's listening. I hope all the mascots are happy, happy. I hope Billie Jean's happy.
She is.
Catherine's Billie Jean, but Ilana's and mine as well. I love listening to the Tennis Podcast. You guys are hilarious, but you're knowledgeable. And you're true fans. You know, that's what I love. You really love it.
We do. We have to do 120 podcasts.
Yes, exactly. I know. It's a few years now, though. You're over 1,000.
We are.
Yeah. I know. I look every time now. I go, wow, 1,200 and whatever it is. I think you're in the low
thousands.
Low thousands, yeah.
Yeah. Here's to many more.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Wow. Wow, Matt. You got to speak to Billie Jean King and it was just the best chat. I loved listening to that. So interesting, wasn't it? And so interesting to hear her views on Coco Gauff and the thirst, the hunger she has for this event to keep growing. Something that struck me, you know, the times we've had a chance to spend time with her at Wimbledon the last couple of years is she's in such a rush to just make the most of every day, to make a difference every day. And it's inspiring. But I mean, I think, you know, we'll review this tournament in more detail tomorrow in our final show from the Billie Jean King Cup Finals. But you can tell that she's not satisfied. She's pumped up by it all. There are some lovely touches coming through. The jackets thing, I think, is a great idea. But I think she's only scratching the surface of where she wants this to be in the future.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's such a good way of describing Billie Jean King as well, as in a rush, and she wants to make the most of, as you said, every day, make a difference. She's very aware of her legacy, and that just all comes through. And I think this event is so important to her. It already was, but you know, now especially that it's got her name on it. One thing she said just after we finished recording. Actually, we had a few topics of conversation after we finished recording. One of them was about the Buffalo Bills, as I'm wearing my Buffalo Bills hoodie. She admitted to really liking them, even though she is from LA and likes the Rams. She's also got a soft spot for the Bills, who are
having a great year. What do you think of the Seahawks?
Seahawks didn't come up.
Okay, next time.
But the other thing she wanted to stress was just that message that she gave in the chat about this event being called the World Cup. She thinks that's really important because she's very big on trying to simplify the sport and make it easy for people to follow and understand. And if you call it the World Cup, people kind of immediately know what that means. You know, the best nations in the world competing against each other. And the other thing that she wants the event to be known more for is that playing this event is the way that you can qualify for the Olympics and get into the Olympics, because everyone knows the Olympics. And she said that became clear in her mind when she heard the story of Zena Garrison talking to some kids about her career, and they weren't really that engaged. They didn't really know what she was talking about. And then she said, "I won a gold medal." And suddenly the kids were like, "Wow, gold medal. Can you show us? Have you got it?" All of that. They were suddenly really, really engaged. And it just made her realize, yeah, World Cup, Olympics, that's what people know. And that's what this event can be all about. So I think, as you said, we'll do a proper sort of review of the event maybe tomorrow. But there are some signs, I think, that this edition has been better than the last. I think there's still a very, very long way to go to make it what we all hope it can be and what it should be. But I think that messaging is really, really important in trying to sell what it is and what it's about.
Okay, well, another fantastic couple of matches, a wonderful listen with Billie Jean King. And meanwhile, in Italy, Brandon Nakashima has won the Next Gen Finals, so congratulations to him. Tomorrow, the ATP Finals starts in Turin. Matt, it's all happening. Catherine's been speaking to the doubles players this morning.
I know. It's extraordinary to think that a massive you know, another massive big tennis event is starting tomorrow. And I'm interested in Brandon Nakashima next year because the winners of the Next Gen Finals have all gone on to, you know, rise in the rankings and go deep in Grand Slams. Okay, Hyung Chung has had his career really decimated by injury, but just after he won the Next Gen, he did sort of build on it and reached the Australian Open semi-final. Sinner, Alcaraz, Tsitsipas, they've all done it. It feels like Nakashima has been around a little while already. Feels like he's doing the Next Gen Finals quite late. He seems like he's a little bit behind some of those players, maybe in the development. But it's a big box ticked, and I'm intrigued by him next season as well. I was thinking today there was a scenario this year that wasn't that far from coming off that he was maybe even a Wimbledon finalist because he lost in five sets to Kyrgios. He was up in that match. If he'd finished that off, he would have faced Christian Garin in the quarters, winnable match. And then Nadal, as we know, wasn't able to play the semifinals. Like, he was maybe not that far away from a really big breakthrough. We love his backhand, and I think he's got a good temperament. I just want to see whether we can really kick on next year. It's going to be interesting.
That has really whetted my appetite, Matt, because I hadn't considered any of those points before this conversation. That's why we have Matt Roberts on, folks. I hadn't realised he was that close to the Wimbledon final. I didn't even know he got a good backhand, to be quite honest. And now apparently he's nearly backhand list worthy. And plus, it's a good point. I mean, I very much expected Jack Draper to win this Next Gen Finals and make his step, but it was a cracking match last night, and fair play to Nakashima. He wrestled that off him, and yeah, this could be the stepping stone, so will be really, really interesting. Our mascot for today is Luna, owned by Holmes Finch, and Luna is a huge fan of American tennis, so big Brandon Nakashima buzz that Luna has got, which perhaps explains why Luna appears to be on her back celebrating victory like Rafael Nadal at the French Open. She's got a toy in her mouth. But anyway, her favourite player is Serena, obviously retired now. So Luna follows Brandon Nakashima, Francis Tiafoe and Coco Gauff with great interest, Holmes tells us. When not watching tennis, she likes to take long walks with her humans. What better thing to do? Well, I am going to send a picture of Luna immediately to Catherine because although Catherine is asleep, I dare say that will wake her up. and for once, when I wake her up, I won't get told off because it'll be a photo of Luna. So all good. Matt, you better go and get this last bus out of Glasgow because otherwise you're going to be sitting in that interview room that you're doing this podcast in for the next 12 hours.
And it's a really cold room and it smells of fish. Very odd.
Oh, that's not a combo you want, is it?
No. But okay. It is good for recording the podcast because it's soundproof.
Yeah, good. Excellent. Well, look, we'll be back with shout outs tomorrow because, you know, Matt's got to get out of there. So our mascots are for the year, Darwin for me. Tell you what, Darwin, we're one match away. We're one match away from points for the second week running. So we're going to do a clean sweep of all the finals, the WTA finals, the ATP finals next week. We're going to win that. And then there'll be Davis Cup finals. It's on.
You're doing a West Brom, David. It's like you've got a new manager making your picks for you.
Correct. Mm. It's like I've drafted in
flying up the table
Geno Smith to make my picks for me, and suddenly we're winning four in a row, the Seahawks. Anyway, Catherine's got Carter. Matt's got the dearly departed Gerald. Billie Jean King is sponsoring Billie Jean the dog, along with Alana Kloss. And Chris Albert Lee and Carl Weingartner are our executive producers. That's all for tonight, folks. It's been lovely to chat about these wonderful matches and to listen to Matt talking to Billie Jean King. We'll see you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.